Hello, I am Bob Bostock. You are listening to Discover DEP, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection's official podcast. Each week, we will provide you with timely information about how DEP protects and preserves New Jersey's air, water, land, and natural and historic resources. Please feel free to add this podcast to your iTunes or RSS feed. You can also follow DEP on the web at nj.gov/DEP. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is Bob Bostock, and welcome to another edition of Discover DEP. You can download Discover DEP and subscribe to future editions through iTunes and Google Play. Today we are joined by Mark Syrak and Clay Craighead, Resource Interpretive Specialists at the Visitor Center Museum at Washington Crossing State Park. Every year, thousands of people gather on the banks of the Delaware River to watch the reenactment of General George Washington's daring Christmas Day river crossing. This event has become a tradition for Washington Crossing State Park. It's fun for the whole family and is complete with hundreds of reenactors in full Continental Army dress. So, Mark and Clay, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this annual reenactment at Washington Crossing.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Clay, tell us about George Washington's historic first crossing.
Christmas night, 1776, Washington's Continental Army crosses the Delaware River from Pennsylvania to New Jersey. It takes about 10 hours to get the Army across, so it's a long, long night. 9-mile march to Trenton afterwards, which is, our state capital today, but it was a small village in 1776 with about 100 buildings. The Hessians, the German mercenaries, were stationed there, and Washington wanted to attack them. And, of course, he does. He captures 900 of the Hessians after a brief battle. It's a small battle, but has a big impact on the morale situation. A huge confidence builder, seen as a dramatic turning point early in the war.
What was the weather like that Christmas Day for the crossing?
It was pretty nasty. By about 11 at night, a nor'easter snowstorm kicked in. As I like to joke, it added a little extra drama. But it was a miserable night. One of the soldiers who wrote about it described it as freezing rain, hail, snow, and wind blowing like a hurricane. So a real nasty nor'easter, which continued during the battle the next morning as well.
Now, Mark, the Continental Army was in Pennsylvania. Were they kind of in their winter quarters yet, or is that part of why it was such a surprise for the Hessians that to be attacked on Christmas Day?
Well, they were encamped in Pennsylvania, but it was not truly a winter quarters. They were not building huts. They were not doing anything to make it look like they were staying for any length of time. But the Hessians were pretty comfortable in Trenton in the sense that they did not think that they were going to be attacked originally. But pretty soon, the Americans begin to cross the river in small boatloads, raiding parties, attacking Hessian patrols that are going out. The Hessian patrols are marching all the way up to our park, Johnson's Ferry, which is about a 9-mile march, so 18 miles round trip. And they would also go out to Pennytown, which is today Pennington. So that was about 11 miles, so a 22-mile trip. And along that path, they would be attacked by small boatloads of Americans that had come over and would do a little bit of hit and run on them. Additionally, the Hunterdon County Militia were starting to come out and do the same thing, hit and run. So the Hessians actually, by the time they really get moving, that they are in the town, it becomes quite uncomfortable because every time they go out, a couple of guys are being wounded or possibly killed. So it's not the best situation for them.
So did they cut back on their patrols because of that? And is that part of what helped preserve the surprise element?
No, the patrols continue because they're afraid that there is a possibility that the Americans could come across. There actually is one situation where the commanding officer in New Brunswick, General Grant, will send a notice to Colonel Rawl, the commander of the Hessians here in Trenton, telling him that he has good information that the Americans are planning an attack. So the patrols do continue. The surprise element comes from the decision to make a night crossing and then march down to Trenton. It's really just a strategic move that really allows him to have the surprise.
And the snowstorm helps as well with that.
That helped keep the noise down too, didn't it?
Well, a couple, that as well, and a couple of the patrols, the morning of December 26th, were canceled. One was canceled, one was shortened because of the severity of the storm. So those patrols not being out gave Washington some additional surprise as well.
Now, part of the story that has been passed down through the centuries is that the part of the reason we were so successful at surprising the Hessians is because they had made so much merry on Christmas Day that they were all kind of hungover and sleeping in. Is there truth to that?
No documentary evidence to prove it whatsoever. Mark and I are in the same opinion on this, or with the information we have. It's really a myth that they were celebrating, drinking, partying. Again, all the evidence from the diaries from the Hessians, the American side doesn't mention any drinking. One of the Hessian diaries mentions how they've been fatigued constantly by the raids. He says, "We haven't slept one night in peace since coming to this place." So the idea that they're going to take a night off and have a party and celebrate really makes no sense, and there's no evidence to support it. It's a great story. Yeah, it makes for a great story, as I like to say, poor history, though.
How long had they been in Trenton before the crossing? How long had the Hessians been in Trenton?
Was it December 8th?
12th. The 12th is when the Hessians come in.
So they'd been there almost 2 weeks.
Almost 2 weeks, that's correct. Yeah.
So being harassed for 2 weeks, that would definitely take its toll, no doubt about it.
Now, yeah. One of the other elements that does allow Washington to surprise along with the weather is that those boatloads of Americans, those small raiding parties, had been going on for the 2 weeks. And one of them had actually come over at the same time as the crossing was occurring, unbeknownst to actual General Washington. And this was 40 Virginians looking for a retaliatory attack for one of their men being lost in an earlier raid. And they attacked the outposts around Trenton. Colonel Raw, having been told by General Grant that there was a possibility of an attack, believes this might be that attack, and turns out the entire garrison of almost 1,400 men. 40 Americans very quickly are able to disappear into the woods. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to it. But it does kind of have the Hessians let their guard down a little bit. This is nothing more than just another raid we've been dealing with for the last 2 weeks. There's no large attack coming. Little do they know that coming down the road is 2,400 Americans.
So it was an unintended better.
That's exactly correct.
So every year now we reenact the crossing at Washington's Crossing. How long has that been going on?
Well, the first reenactment actually was by Rider students in 1947. Fraternity brothers from Phi Sigma Nu, for their new pledges, had decided that this was something that they would do. They had them get in full regalia, what they thought were colonial uniforms, and they had some Hessians down in Trenton, and they crossed the river. And the joke that I always hear about this is that General Washington, the brother that was portraying him, was afraid of horses. Therefore, he rode his bike into Trenton. And they had a pillow fight to commemorate the Battle of Trenton. That was the first time that anybody really did something like that. And that's been written a lot about by Arnold Ropieck, a Trenton Times reporter, who has passed away since. But he was one of the ones involved. And if you ever want to go in the archives of that, you can find out a lot more about that crossing. But the crossing as we know it today really started in 1952. When St. John Terrell staged a crossing, and it's been going continuously since then. So this is the 64th annual crossing.
And who organizes the crossing?
Basically, it is a joint venture between the Pennsylvania State Park and the New Jersey State Park. Pennsylvania does take the lead because they own the boats that the troops are going to come across in. So, they kind of control what's going to happen there, process between the two parks.
And the boats, they're called Durham boats?
The ones that are utilized on Christmas Day at the reenactment are Durham boats, yes.
And tell us a little about Durham boats, because I think, people whose main reference to Washington's Crossing is that famous picture where it kind of looks like they're in a rowboat and the general is standing up and the flag is behind and, the ice floats and everything else. Durham boats aren't quite like that, are they?
Yeah, that's correct. Emanuel Leutze was trying to portray a Durham boat, but his painting was not entirely accurate, which he was not trying to be, which I always like to point out. It was a romantic time, and he was trying to show that a small group of right-minded individuals could overthrow tyranny. So the painting is more to evoke emotion than to be accurate historically. Durham boats are rather large. They're between 45 and 65 feet long, usually about 8 foot in breadth. If you stood in one, they're about 4 or 5 feet deep. I always show that it comes up to my chest, and I'm 5'11". So it's a pretty deep boat. They're actually built to take a very heavy load because they were supposed to move the iron ore from the Durham Ironworks up in Durham, Pennsylvania, down to Philadelphia. And the problem on the river is that there are several falls, such as right here at Trenton, the Trenton Falls and Scudder's Falls, where it gets very shallow. So Robert Durham, who owned the Durham Ironworks, invented these boats. They're flat bottom and they only have a draft of about 24 to 30 inches. So even fully loaded with the larger ones that could take up to 20 tons or 40,000 pounds, they can get through these falls areas. General Washington has seen them in use along the Delaware and realizes that they're actually perfect for moving his men across the river. I say men because that's the key point. The style of the boat is for infantry, can get into it in and out very easily. The other kind of boat that's very instrumental in the crossing are the ferry boats. That's the whole reason that he crosses at McConkie's and Johnson's Ferry. The roads lead there and he has an established ferry. The ferries are built so that they can take a team of horses or oxen and a wagon across the river, which makes them perfect to bring the cannon and the artillery and the horses across the river.
So it was a combination of the ferries and the Durham boats.
Yes.
How many men altogether made the crossing?
About 2,400 men crossed the river, 18 cannons, and between 75 and 100 horses. It takes about 9 to 10 hours. Behind schedule, General Washington had hoped to cross in about 6 hours, be over by midnight, but due to the nor'easter that had blown in that we discussed earlier, it had slowed everything down. And then the march takes about 4 hours.
4 hours to go the 9 miles to Trenton.
Exactly.
Let's look back at the reenactment. What happens on the reenactment day, and when does it occur?
Well, on the Jersey side here, Mark will be actually speaking this year at around 12:30. I'll give you a little historical background.
And this is on Christmas Day?
On Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be wrapping that up around 1 o'clock in time for the Pennsylvania side to do their presentation, which includes Washington addressing the troops, reading some passages from The American Crisis. These are the times the tribemen sold.
Great Thomas Paine work.
Thomas Paine, yeah, absolutely. And then they start getting into the boats and cross the river. Usually 3 or 4 boatloads. It varies occasionally. 100 reenactors or so will cross and land on the Jersey side. That's weather permitting, of course. So we're hoping with the recent rain, the river will rise a little bit and won't be an issue for the crossing, the dress rehearsal, which is coming up on December 11th as well.
Oh, so there's a dress rehearsal. And people can go and watch that?
Yep, and that's kind of a practice run as well. There is an encampment on the Pennsylvania side, I think from 10 to 4, and there's a fee for that. But the reenactment will begin at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you can watch it from both sides of the river. It will be free on the Jersey side.
So no charge here on the Jersey side.
So if you're just coming to see the crossing itself, it makes sense to come to New Jersey. But if you would like to see an encampment of Continental soldiers, that'll be in Pennsylvania on the day of the rehearsal.
But if you're from New Jersey and going over to Pennsylvania, you have to pay the fee. So that's really kind of a sort of taxation without representation, isn't it? Which is, frowned upon.
The taxation will be equally levied to Pennsylvania residents as well.
So they're represented, but our citizens would not be. Well, we've got to talk about that.
I just wanted to mention the nice thing is that during the reenactment, when we turn it over basically to the Pennsylvania side, they do have speakers set up that are pointed towards New Jersey, and it's loud enough that you can hear what General Washington is saying over in Pennsylvania. So you don't have to be right there to hear everything that's going on.
And how big a crowd usually turns out for the reenactment?
It's weather dependent. On Christmas Day, our minimum, I would say, is about 3,000 to 4,000 between the two sides. And that's just kind of your diehards, that it's part of their every Christmas tradition. And then if it's a nice day, we could go up to 7,000 or 8,000 between the sides. And then a couple of years ago when it was 70 degrees, it was probably about 12,000 between the two sides.
So if somebody wants to come, what time should they arrive to make sure they get a convenient parking space and a good place to watch the crossing?
We always recommend to come around by 11:30 because the later you come, the further you're parked away, which then means you have to walk.
Mm. No shuttle buses.
No shuttle buses. That was tried one time, and the traffic is so horrible that you can't actually get down there and back. to help people out fast enough. So no shuttle buses. Usually, if it's a really busy day, you could end up walking 3/4 of a mile to the river, but on general, it's about a half mile or less walk to the river.
So it's not that far, and there's plenty of parking.
Yes.
Up and down the river, I guess.
Yeah, come into the New Jersey State Park, come in through the main entrance, and you'll be directed by personnel as to where to park.
That's great. The crossing isn't the only event that takes place in the park during December to commemorate those events that were so important to the Revolutionary War. What else is going on in the park in December?
Yeah, well, I'll be speaking on December 17th at 2 p.m. at the Visitor Center. A little lecture. Using the words of the participants, the diaries from the soldiers and the Hessians and Washington to give you a little color to the story. And of course, to me, that's really where the history comes to life when you read the letters of the participants. So I try and weave that into my talk. That'll be at 2 o'clock on December 17th.
And where in the park does that take place?
That's at the Visitor Center Museum. Then on the 23rd is our a lantern walking tour. There's two of them actually, 7 p.m. and 7:30. This will be starting down by the river. You'll get a tour of the Nelson House, the Stone Barn, and the Johnson Perry House. There is a fee involved on that.
I believe the adult is $10 and seniors and kids are $5.
And how long does the tour last and what sort of distance does it cover?
It's not a long hike. You know, it's probably like a third of a mile at most, but it takes about an hour plus.
An hour and a half, I would say, is the average length. Some go a little shorter, some go a little longer, depending on questions and things of that sort.
And it's mostly outside, so people should dress for the weather?
Dress accordingly, yes. You will go into some warm buildings, but there'll be plenty of walking outside. It is well worth it if people can make it in the Stone Barn. We mentioned that. We usually have a woodworker who is in there and talks about what it was like to be living out in the middle of the country and suddenly the Hessians show up at your door, things of that sort. And then usually at the last stop at the ferry house, once you've toured the ferry house, there are some cider and some Alikaken, which I always cannot pronounce. It's basically a Dutch treat that's like a munchkin.
Oh.
But it's really, really good.
Like a little donut of sort.
Yes.
Yeah, nice little pastry to go with your cider. Are there any other events in December surrounding the crossing?
The last one is on the 25th itself. We kind of mentioned already that there'll be a presentation prior to the crossing by myself about 12:30 on the 25th.
And that takes place?
Right along the riverbank.
Right along the river.
Yeah. The buildings are not open on Christmas Day. However, staff will be down at the crossing.
That's great. You mentioned play, how you incorporate so much of the primary sources in your talk, which I think is great because this is one of those events that was so pivotal that a lot of mythology has grown up around it in the almost 2.5 centuries since it took place. So relying on those primary sources is really key. And I think people who think they know all about Washington's Crossing would probably be surprised at some of the things they'll learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you think would be the most surprising thing somebody might take away from it?
Well, I think it's one we touched on a little bit is the big myth that the Hessians were celebrating Christmas, drinking, and partying, because that's worked its way into Hollywood movies, textbooks. We've had teachers say they've been teaching their students, but that's really downplayed, again, because of the lack of evidence. But again, the impact, I think, of the victory, I think, is surprising as well. This was a small victory, but it was a huge morale boost. The prelude to our story is a series of defeats by Washington trying to defend New York.
He was chased all the way across New Jersey to Pennsylvania.
And Washington, in mid-December, confides in a relative. Basically, he says, I fear the game's pretty nearly up.
Yeah.
So it was looking bleak. Recruitment had fallen off a cliff. Basically, nobody was coming forward to join the Army.
And a lot of the enlistments were coming through the end of the year, right?
Yes, yeah. All these little details just makes it, you know, Congress had adjourned to Baltimore. They fled the capital, fearing the British were going to cross the river. So there was just many little details of what looked like the war was about ready to end.
Yeah.
The British certainly felt that way. But then Washington crosses the river, wins this small battle, Trenton, and it has a huge morale effect. To sum it up, I use the words of a Nicholas Cresswell from Virginia. He was a loyalist, and he noticed the impact in Virginia of the victories here in New Jersey, and he wrote that prior to Christmas, the American recruiting parties couldn't raise a man, but now, following their late successes, they are all liberty mad again. So again, these small victories, Trenton, including Princeton,
right,
a little over a week later, had a huge morale effect, and the result is recruitment. It encouraged men to come forward to join a winning army, not a losing army.
One could say we clutched victory from what appeared to be the jaws of defeat at that pivotal moment.
Absolutely. I think it's the game-saving moment of the Revolution. Without the victory, it looked as if the war was lost.
Well, New Jersey is known as the crossroads of the Revolution because so much of the war was fought here in New Jersey. But certainly this event was among the most pivotal, and perhaps the most pivotal, of all of the battles that were fought here in the Garden State. That really made a huge difference in our ability to carry on and then later to win the war. So I think commemorating it every year is wonderful. It's so important, I think, to be reminded from time to time of the sacrifices that were made by our forebears to win our liberty, and of the responsibility that we all have today to make sure that we are true to the cause for which they fought. And that is, as the Declaration said, that all of us are created equal, and we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness here in the United States. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you both so much for coming in. I know you're very busy getting ready for the big events later in December, but I'm sure that, particularly if the weather's good, you know, we'll get a good crowd out there for Washington's Crossing this year, and in any event, it's going to be a great event. So thanks so much for coming in. We have links to all of these events on the description of the podcast, so people could just click on those and find out exactly what's going on, when and where and what time. And so it's important that we commemorate this historic event that made such a difference in our war for independence, and commemorate it in an event that has itself become an historic event on Christmas Day in Washington Crossing State Park. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for listening to Discover DEP. If you have comments on the podcast or ideas for future podcast topics, please email us at podcast@dep.nj.gov. Enjoy the rest of your day.